ahead.
Yes.
And they... What caused the master to discontinue giving engine orders and helm orders?
Well, it was very apparent that we were not going to be able to extricate the vessel off the reef after...
Did he make any kind of a statement that this is futile, or we must stop, or it's a danger, anything like that that you can recall?
Yeah, yes, he did.
Can you characterize what he said?
I believe it's similar to what you just said, that this obviously this isn't going to work. We better, you know, we'd stop it now.
We'll stop.
Yeah.
Do you recall when the vessel notified the Coast Guard when that was done? Were you present on the bridge?
I was present. I don't recall the precise time.
Okay. Was there... Do you have any feeling for whether it was 10 or 15 minutes after the grounding, or immediately following, or was it associated with any of the maneuvers or orders that you can think of?
There was a short period of time after the grounding. I have a sense of 10 to 15 minutes or something like that.
All right. Just what you recall.
Yes.
Do you have any recollection of what the conversation was about? What information was provided?
No, I do not.
Okay. Do you recall anything, any instructions from the Coast Guard?
No, I do not. I didn't hear any of the transmission between the captain and the Coast Guard.
Okay. Were you, but you were on the bridge at that time?
I was, yes, on the bridge, somewhere on the bridge.
Okay. Is it that they were not audible, or you just did not recall them?
Not audible
they
to me.
Not
wherever it, that was from the bridge wing to inside, answering the telephone, various other things that I was doing that you know, I would not have heard the transmission.
All right. Do you recall who the first person was to arrive on the bridge after the grounding?
Other than the captain, or?
Yes, after the captain.
Chief mate.
And do you recall who the chief mate spoke to?
The captain.
Did he speak to the captain?
Yes, he did.
Do you recall any kind of a conversation with the chief mates where you said, well, the captain knows about the grounding, or he's been informed, or?
Yes,
do you recall?
I'm not really privy to, I mean, the chief mate didn't say anything to me, as I recall. He may have made a comment, but I'm not privy to any conversation that the chief mate and the captain had on the bridge.
But you observed he and the captain talking on the bridge?
Yes.
Right. How many minutes after the grounding would you say the chief mate arrived on the bridge?
Within moments.
Within moments.
Yes.
And he was the first deck officer to arrive on the bridge?
Correct.
When did the second mate arrive?
Oh, well, perhaps 100 or perhaps a little after.
I'm sorry, the time again, please?
Perhaps 1 o'clock or a little bit after.
Yeah. All right. Was there any kind of a conference between the captain and you and anybody on the bridge?
A conference? No,
conference.
There was not. No.
Did you?
Between the captain and the chief mate, and of course, the captain was talking to the engine room, or the chief engineer.
Now, this is the second mate's watch, of course, and he arrived at 1 o'clock. Did he relieve you at that time?
No. The captain instructed the second mate to go up on the bow and prepare to walk out the starboard anchor.
Starboard anchor. And then did he instruct you to remain on the bridge?
I remained on the bridge.
You remained on the bridge. There was nothing said. You just simply remained on the bridge.
Yeah.
Okay. How long were you on the bridge?
until about 3:45 in the morning.
All right, at that time, who relieved you?
The second mate relieved me at that time.
Okay. Was there ever a consultation, let's say, between you and the master at the chart to reconstruct what had happened?
That evening, no.
Well, all right. Did you take any fixes after the grounding?
Yes, I did.
And did you take any fixes subsequent to that, to the grounding? Any later fixes?
Yes, I did.
Did the vessel seem to be remaining in the same place?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other events from, say, Busby Island Light to the grounding that we have not asked you or that you can think of that would be of interest to us?
He's not going to be able to guess what you haven't asked him. He may be able to tell you what he thinks is of interest to you, but that would be speculation on his part. What is of interest to you may be different than what he thinks is of interest to you.
All right. If there's anything you can think of that would be of interest to us that's not been covered, if you could just tell us.
No, I can't think of anything else.
Mr. Chairman, I believe this is all the questions we have at this time. We do have Mr. Sager with some questions on human performance, which we could take at this time.
But Mr. Woody, your
questions at this time regarding the events leading up to the collision.
You're listening to live coverage of the National Transportation Safety Board hearings on the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. Right now, the first witness is Third Officer Gregory Cousins. The inquiry board is taking a break to discuss now whether to continue questioning by the human relations officer about, and it appears that they are in the midst of taking a short break.
Just to recap some of the things that we've heard during testimony of Cousins. Cousins, by the way, was the person guarding the Exxon Valdez at the time of the accident. And he said a couple of interesting points. One of the key points was that shortly before the grounding, they were trying to avoid a cone of ice that was coming out of Columbia Glacier, and their course was designed to avoid that cone of ice. He said that there was about 0.9 miles between Bly Reef and that cone of ice. And he had been ordered by the captain to steer a course through that ice. He was starting to make his course corrections and go back onto the channel, and had ordered a rudder change of 20 degrees right, and he said nothing happened. There was no response.
The questions from Woody have tried to explain, or tried to establish very precisely just exactly what happened when. And we have a picture now of the third mate, who incidentally was standing a portion of another man's watch. I mean, in maritime accidents, this is a terrible piece of ill luck. He was standing a watch that actually belonged to the second mate. He had not called his relief and told Mr. Woody that he was feeling fine, that he felt that he didn't have to call the second mate until after they were actually clear of the ice.
And he said, in fact, that he had told the second mate not to take his time coming up to the bridge until they got this situation resolved, and the situation was steering the course around the ice and around Bly Reef. After he attempted these course corrections, it didn't work. He initially ordered a 20 degrees right, and when that didn't work, he initially ordered a 10 degrees right. When that didn't work, he then ordered a 20 degrees right, and shortly after that, within about 2 minutes after that, it appears that the Exxon Valdez ran aground. The other important point is that while he said that they were off autopilot, It was, the ship was in a program mode that it was accelerating, and that he had not considered as a course of action slowing down the vessel as they were trying to get through this ice. And in fact, the ship was accelerating at the time.
That's right, and yet he made the point that the vessel didn't seem to be responding to his rudder changes either. He actually stepped out on the bridge wing at one point while the he had given the command for 10 degrees right rudder, and came back in and discovered that there didn't seem to be any significant course change. He then called for the more radical course change, first to 20 degrees right rudder, and then he went and informed the captain. And this is a rather dramatic moment. He's been informed by the forward lookout of the red flashing light that identified Bligh Reef, and he has attempted to make his course changes. At the moment, it appears to him that nothing much is happening in terms of changing his course. He called the captain, and he said in a rather steady voice that he told the captain that he thought there was something terribly wrong going on.
And it was just about at that moment that the Exxon Valdez went aground. He said he had the sensation of six sharp jolts that hit the vessel.
Yeah, and in fact, investigators earlier on, shortly after this accident occurred, speculated that what happened was that the tanker struck a rock or a pinnacle that was standing off of Bligh Reef by some distance, and that he first hit this, and that that may have been, in fact, where some of the major damage to the hull was done.
We'll be coming back in just a few moments with Greg Cousins, the third officer of the Exxon Valdez, on the stand. And we expect then that he will be questioned by the human performance expert, who will be looking at things like his night vision and his ability, whether he was tired or not. They said that they had 6 hours of sleep the night before, and he said that that was enough, and he was feeling real good. And we expect that the questions will continue along that line. And perhaps they will get into questions about Captain Hazelwood, but we don't know that for a fact at this point.
No, in fact, all we've known about the captain so far, and it seems to me that Mr. Woody has been very careful about establishing this, when the captain was on the bridge, what commands he actually gave, whether he ascertained that his commands to Greg Cousins were really understood. And in fact, Cousins said that he did, that the captain asked him if he were comfortable with the situation of passing around the edge of the ice coming off Columbia Glacier, and that he told the captain that he was. He said, in fact, that the captain asked him twice about that. We'll be back with more live coverage of the NTSB hearings on Into the Wreck of the Exxon Valdez in probably about 10 minutes. I'm Corey Flintoff here with Bruce Melzer. Coverage of these hearings comes to you from KSKA Anchorage and from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Okay, station, here we go. We're going to be coming down in a couple moments here. We'll keep you posted here. See what's going on. They just gaveled us in. We're going to give you a countdown, and we're just going to start right now. Coming down in 5.
Corey Flintoff here with Bruce Melzer, and we're in the midst of testimony by the third mate of the Exxon Valdez, Gregory Cousins. He's being called to the stand again by the chief investigator here, or the chairman of the Board of Inquiry for NTSB. That's Lee Dickinson. We've just heard rather dramatic testimony from Gregory Cousins about the moments, the sequence of events when the Exxon Valdez first struck a pinnacle of rock and then went up on Bligh Reef.
What we're going to be hearing now is cross-examination or questioning from a human performance expert who's going to be looking. We expected things like whether or not Greg Cousins had adequate rest. He said that he did. What his night vision was like, and perhaps maybe getting into questions about the performance of the captain as well, and what he may have observed about the captain. We're waiting for things to get started now.
So far, we've only heard about the captain's performance in a kind of a peripheral way, and all the testimony so far seems to give the impression, at least, that the captain was performing in a normal way for a cruise of this kind, and also that the captain was displaying adequate oversight and adequate care, even though he was not on the bridge when the grounding took place, not on the bridge when Gregory Cousins, who's not licensed for this particular kind of piloting in Prince William Sound, was on the bridge. Cousins was actually standing out the first part of the second mate's watch, and he himself said that he didn't call the second mate and told him, in fact, to take his time coming up on the bridge. We're waiting now for the witnesses to be seated. Gregory Cousins coming back up to the stand with his attorney.
In terms of the captain's performance, the other thing that we learned was that Cousins was in pretty close communication with him, and as a matter of fact was on the phone with him at the time that the Exxon Valdez slammed into the rocks. It appears that the captain was exercising a lot of control, had directed Cousins to steer a course that would avoid what they called a large cone of ice that was coming out from Columbia Glacier, and Cousins during the last session went up and drew that on the map, and what it shows is that there's really a pretty tight shot, about 9/10 of a mile, between the leading edge of the ice and Bligh Island, Bligh Reef, and also Bligh Reef, and also Busby Island. The hearings are about to start.
We have 28 witnesses.
This is Lee Dickinson speaking, the chairman of the Board of Inquiry.
When I ask for a 15-minute break, please stay within that 15-minute time period, or else we'll never get done.
Mr. Sager, will you continue questioning Mr. Cousins?
Okay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me all right?
No.
Mr. Cousins. What other companies have you sailed for besides Exxon?
I worked for NOAA for a period of approximately 3 years.
In what capacities?
They have no AB or ordinary ratings. It was as a deckhand, primarily with the same duties as an AB.
And then you went to Exxon?
Yes, I did.
Since you've been working with your license, I have several vessels here, Galveston, Charleston, North Slope, New Orleans. Is that a complete list of vessels that you've served on as a mate, to the best of your knowledge?
Yes, and the Exxon Valdez.
And the Exxon Valdez. In going over the Coast Guard discharges for this period, I have about 13 months of time accumulated on that mate's license. Does that square with your records?
I don't have those before me, but that sounds about right, yes.
Okay. That's not inclusive of the Valdez. 13
not,
months
not inclusive.
On vessels other than the Valdez.
As I say, I don't have that information before me, so.
Okay. On the evening of the accident, and Captain Hazelwood returned to the vessel, do you recall how he was dressed when he came to the pilot house?
He had a cap on and I believe a dark blue wool coat.
Overcoat?
Yes.
Did you detect any odor of alcohol in his breath at that time?
No, I did not.
Were you close enough to him where that was a possibility?
Later in the evening, yes. When I was talking with the captain and we were discussing the impending maneuver around the ice.
When he arrived at the vessel, did he appear disheveled? Unsteady on his feet?
No.
Did he have any difficulty enunciating words?
Not to my recollection, no.
And he appeared oriented?
Yes.
When the captain went, after the captain went below, while Captain Murphy was directing the navigation of the vessel, and then he returned, did he appear any differently to you?
No, he did not.
Did he appear to have been sleeping?
No, there was no change in his appearance or mannerisms.
Was he still wearing his overcoat?
No, he had taken that off at some point upon coming up to the bridge initially.
On either of the times that he came up on the bridge to talk with you, did he appear intoxicated?
No, he did not.
Was it in the plan that you discussed with Captain Hazelwood while you were at the radar and making the diversion from the inbound or from the outbound lane across the separation zone into the inbound lane and then out of the TSS altogether? Was it in the plan to take a fix at Busby Island?
Yes, that was my plan, because as the captain's instructions were to me, that's the point where we're going to start having to turn the vessel back towards the lanes.
And you would normally take a fix before you did that?
Yes, to determine the position of the vessel, yes.
When you took the fix, were you surprised at where you were?
No, I was not.
Were you uneasy at all about where you were? At the speed that you were going, the heading of the vessel?
Uneasy? No, I was not uneasy at that moment, no.
When did you first become uneasy?
Initially, I was had concern when the vessel did not apparently respond to the 10-degree right. Concern grew from there when the rudder had been at 20 right for some time that I wasn't. The vessel wasn't experiencing a transfer away from that track line that I would have expected.
How could you tell it was not transferring?
By bearings on different landmarks.
Were you surprised to find the ship on automatic pilot?
It was unusual.
Why would it have been unusual?
Well, considering the location of the vessel and not normally put in an autopilot in those types of waters.
Would it be unusual because the vessel was maneuvering?
Yes. I would have to say that additionally that it would be unusual for it to be an autopilot in any traffic scheme.
Do you have any idea why the vessel was in automatic pilot?
No, I do not.
It was never explained to you?
No, it wasn't.
Did you ever have any concerns about the vessel being on a course of 180 degrees?
No, I did not.
Did that appear to be an appropriate heading for the vessel, given the picture that you had in the radar?
That's the course that was required for us to get around the ice.
Then you agreed with the captain's decision to make to place the vessel on that heading when you made your assessment?
If since the decision was not to enter the ice flow at all, that's the course that was required to get around that ice.
Did anyone discuss the option of reducing speed?
No. Since the decision not to even attempt picking our way through the ice, reducing speed wouldn't have been prudent, I don't think.
Which landmark did you use to determine the amount of transfer that was or was not taking place?
I was using Bly Reef Buoy and Reef Island.
And where were you standing at the time you were sighting these landmarks?
I was standing at the 3-centimeter radar, which is located on the port side of the navigation area.
That's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Woody, are there any other questions from the tech panel?
There are no further questions from the tech panel.
Thank you. Hallett, any questions?
Mr. Chairman, no questions from Alyeska at this time.
Thank you. Commander Walburn?
Mr. Chairman, I have several questions concerning operation of the vessel and standard operating procedures. First exhibit I'd like to bring attention to is for Oscar.
We have a copy of, we didn't get any of the exhibit packet, but we happen to have a copy of that exhibit.
Okay. For Oscar is the navigation and bridge organization manual. It has several sections, including the purpose, the navigation responsibilities, duties of the officer at sea and in U.S. navigable waters, duties of the watch officer in sea and in U.S. entering, leaving port and in transit, personnel requirements, anchoring, master pilot interface, bridge organization.
Commander, I think Mr. Cousins has that exhibit.
He does.
Do you have a question?
Yes. First question is procedures for departing departing port.
Directing the questions right now is Coast Guard Commander Darrell Waldron. He's a member of the Marine Safety Staff for the 17th Coast Guard District. They're the Coast Guard's representative at these hearings.
I will not go through those again, but there are several things that I have questions about. First, you stated that you checked out the fathometer, recorded the check of that. Does this fathometer have a fathometer alarm?
Yes, at the remote part of the unit, the remote readout, the fathometer does have an alarm.
Part of the port departure checklist states that that depth alarm would be set. Could you tell me what it was set at, please?
I cannot recall at this time.
Did you set the alarm?
Yes, I did. That's a normal procedure.
What is it normally set at?
I can't recall right now.
Is it 50 fathoms or 100 fathoms?
I believe 50 fathom. That's just a guess. I can't really recall at this time.
Did the alarm go off during the transit?
No, it did not.
Did you go over several areas that were under 50 fathoms?
Yes.
In your opinion, then it was not set at 50 fathoms, or either the alarm was not functioning?
I couldn't recall what the setting on the alarm is right now.
The indication is the fathometer recorder was not turned on until sometime after 2300, is that correct?
The recorder?
Right.
I leave the recorder on from the time of testing. If someone else may have turned it off to save paper, but I normally leave.
The indication is the fathometer recorder was not turned on until sometime after 2300, is that correct?
The recorder?
Right.
I leave the recorder on from the time of testing. If someone else may have turned it off to save paper, but I normally leave all instruments on that have been tested. They remain on.
At what time did you, what was the procedure for letting a pilot off?
I escort the pilot from the bridge to the pilot ladder. I stand by and observe his progress down the pilot ladder. The AB stands by with a ring buoy. And upon disembarking the pilot, bridge is notified when the pilot is away. From that point on, all time was spent stowing the pilot ladder.
Where is this pilot ladder stowed?
Inboard of where we deploy it for pilot embarkation.
How long does this take?
Took approximately 10 to 12 minutes.
On page 49 of the organization book, talks about watch types. There are four different watch types, type A, B, C, and D. Which watch type would you characterize as being appropriate for this evening?
Excuse me, Commander. Sorry, Mr. President. What page of Fort Oscar are you talking about?
It's page 58, I'm sorry. NTSB number, page 58.
58?
58, that's correct. It's page 49 at the bottom of the page.
Watch condition C would have been demanded.
Watch type C states that their supplementary personnel are necessary so that there are two officers on the bridge with a lookout posted. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was there two officers on the bridge?
Not at all times.
With the lookout posted, what does lookout mean to you?
A lookout is an individual whose sole duty means looking out for traffic or lights or whatever may be of interest to personnel on the bridge.
What directions did you give to the lookout during your 20 to 2400 watch?
The lookout was posted on the bow. He is instructed to report everything that he sees.
What instructions did you give him?
I don't recall that I gave any specific instructions.
From the period of time 2315, approximately when the captain called the lookout to come back and help the pilot off, until the 2350, who was the lookout?
There could have been no lookout.
There was no lookout during that time?
No.
The decision was made to bring the lookout from the bow and post her on the starboard wing of the bridge. Is that normal procedure for departing a port?
Quite frequently, departing Valdez, yes.
Particular circumstance here where you were seeing a large quantity of ice on radar. Is there any instructions that are given to the lookout concerning ice location, reporting of ice?
I may have mentioned that to the lookout. I can't recall it. If I did or if I did not.
What is the distance between the bridge and the bow of the vessel?
I estimate of 800 feet.
In the darkness that you reported earlier, the difficult visibility to see objects in the water, was it advisable to have a lookout 800 feet away from the bow of the vessel?
Are you asking my opinion?
Yes.
In my opinion, I would have preferred a lookout forward.
Were you in charge of the watch?
Not at that time. Well, in charge of, no. The vessel was being conned by the master. The master instructed the lookout to come back to the bridge wing. I didn't realize this until sometime after.
Appendix C is standing orders for the vessel.
What page, Commander?
That's page 83 on the bottom, 94 at the top.
Just use the numbers at the top right-hand corner.
Part of the standing orders in paragraph 2 on the next page state that navigational dangers or potential dangers to the vessel is required to pass the alterations of course both during his and her watch and for 1 hour thereafter are to be passed by the relieved officer to the relieving officer. Did you and the captain discuss the areas where there are navigational dangers?
Yes.
What is a ship's policy concerning getting within 0.9 miles of navigational danger?
That is not within company policy.
What do you mean by that? There is no policy concerning the vessel near shoal waters?
There is a policy concerning a vessel near shoal waters. And
what is that policy?
We're instructed, of course, with the grounding line. This particular situation would be in violation of the policy, as I understand it.
Were you aware of the violation of the policy at the time?
At the time of the conversation, no.
During this period of transit, you're in what is called a TSS, or traffic separation scheme. Would you tell me what the policies are as far as transiting areas under TSSs?
In regards to departing the lanes, is that what you're referring to?
Is departing as in regards to the standing orders?
We are to stay within the lanes if any circumstance prevents us from or causes us to have to depart the lanes. We are to communicate prior to any departure from the normal shipping lanes. We communicate with the vessel traffic system and seek their advice or consent.
Did you seek their consent?
Did I?
Yes.
No, I did not. The captain informed me that he had talked and communicated with vessel traffic as to our alteration of course and subsequent departure from the system.
Were you on the bridge during that conversation?
No, I was not.
What time did you return to the bridge from letting the pilot off?
That would have been between 23:34, 23:36 in that time frame.
I believe the conversation was at 23:39 between the master and the VTS. Were you on the bridge during that time?
I was. That was during the time I was taking that fix.
Going along with the standing orders, what are the standing orders say concerning the use of automatic gyro?
The automatic gyro be used strictly in open waters.
Did you discuss the use of the automatic gyro with the captain since it was obviously not open waters?
No, I did not. After I learned that it was on gyro, within minutes I took it off.
Did you consider ice a danger to navigation?
Yes.
What are the normal procedures when there are dangers to navigation ahead of the bow?
I couldn't hear the entire question.
What are the normal procedures when navigating a vessel when you have dangers to navigation ahead of the vessel? What precautions do you take?
Navigation workload is, of course, increased, which requires more personnel on the bridge in terms as far as officer ratings go. One officer is solely responsible for fixing the position of the vessel. The senior officer would be conning the vessel based on information given to him by his navigating officer.
What about a lookout? Where would you post a lookout?
If conditions permitted, the lookout would be posted forward.
How were the, did the conditions this evening permit that?
In my estimation, no.
No?
No.
Why not?
We weren't experiencing any bad weather. The reason that oftentimes the lookout is called back in that area is that you can experience even very rough seas in this seemingly enclosed area, sheltered area. The reason for bringing personnel back aft is for their safety.
Maybe I misunderstood you. Are you saying that the conditions that evening would permit the lookout forward?
It would permit, yes.
Okay. I made a statement that I'd like to get clarified concerning when you were about to make the turn or in the process of making the turn. You looked out the port side. Would you clarify your statement concerning the lights that you saw off the port side?
I saw the Bligh Reef buoy, red flashing. That was, the rudder was at 20 right then, yes. Also, the Busby Island light was showing white.
Showing white off the port side also?
Yes, aft.
Would you go up to the chart there, please, and draw a line between those two aids, a straight line, please?
Questions right now by the Coast Guard Commander Waldron. The Coast Guard's representative here are seeking to establish where the Exxon Valdez was in terms of the navigational aids. Two lights specifically that Third Mate Greg Cousins saw that he had in sight on his port side when they were when he was making his 20-degree right-hand turn. The two lights, he's now up at the chart drawing a line between the two lights, one the buoy that marked Bligh Reef and the other the white light that marked Busby Island. He just finished drawing that line, which runs roughly, as well as we can see it, parallel to the navigation lanes.
Northwest of that line, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you were in the process of making the turn at that time, is that correct?
Could you wait just one moment? I'd like to duplicate this here.
Sure.
No answer. Yes, that's correct that I was wrong.
Are you familiar with the maneuvering characteristics of this vessel?
I have a limited knowledge of that, yes.
Where are they posted on the vessel?
They're posted on the bridge on the port side.
Okay. They're also part of the exhibit. Brown folder. Let me get the exhibit number for you, please. It's
mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a 3 Juliet.
I don't think that's
do you
a
have
that
available?
Given. J, but I got a copy.
Commander Darrell Waldron is now attempting to ask questions of Third Mate Gregory Cousins regarding the maneuvering characteristics of the tanker, the size and class of the Exxon Valdez. Cousins actually hedged a bit, said he was somewhat familiar with that, although he acknowledged that the maneuvering characteristics are posted right on the bridge of the vessel. Right now he's been passed an exhibit showing that same scheme of the maneuvering characteristics of the vessel. He's going over it now in company with his attorney.
One of the interesting things we've learned during the past half hour of questions and answers is that the lookout, which normally would have been at the front, at the bow of the ship, was in fact pulled back much, much closer to the bridge. These are very long ships, and you now have a lookout in a situation where they say that they had ice, and they now have a lookout close to toward the back of the ship instead of on the front. And Cousin said he felt that that was not advisable, and in fact it appears to violate their operating policy.
He said, too, that it was under orders of the captain that the lookout was pulled back from the bow, apparently, while they were in Valdez Narrows.
They also said that the standing orders of a ship of this kind is to have two officers on the bridge when they're in danger of navigation, and Cousin says that he would consider ice to be a navigational hazard, he said that that was not done. So that is another thing that at least the line of questioning that the Coast Guard is trying to establish is that the Exxon Valdez at various points was violating its own policy.
Characteristics of this vessel. It is in the four quadrants, full speed in ballast and also fully loaded, and half speed, both in ballast and fully loaded. This vessel at the present time was somewhat in between the two. It was almost loaded, and it was going more than half speed by about a knot and a half. Could you look at the area that says in ballast half speed and give the advance at that speed of the vessel when making a turn?
Could you repeat that? I didn't quite hear all of
the
questions.
Okay, in the lower left-hand quadrant, there is a diagram of the vessel in ballast at half speed making a right-hand turn.
Yes.
Would you read what the advance for that turn would be?
6/10 of a mile.
6/10 of a mile. And right above that, at half speed or at fully loaded, what is the advance on that?
In the full load condition?
Correct.
0.58.
Okay, on the full speed loaded condition? The upper left-hand corner.
0.59 miles.
0.59. And full speed in ballast condition? Lower left hand.
0.61 miles.
Okay. I'd like to